Hi, you're watching Notepad with me, Ibrahim Sani. Now, we're doing a host of series of interviews in Singapore about understanding a little bit better about the digital economy, about the VC world, about the startup world, trying to understand a little bit better about what moves the needle when it comes to a post-pandemic environment. Here, I am at the famous Block 71 of Quest Ventures office. This is a place where a bunch of startups that are now today, you know, $1 million, hundreds of millions of ringgit worth. And because of that, we're trying to understand where the epicenter is, why it is the most important place right now for Asian startups to work with. So joining me for this interview is the founder the partner of Asia Fund of Quest Ventures, Jeffrey Sia. Jeff, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. I want to learn a little bit better about what moves you to do this, particularly in a situation where you are already in a comfortable situation, you're already in a situation where you know you could perhaps even retire in that kind of environment. Why did you jump from that kind of world into the world of VC?
Oh, great. I'm Singaporean, my mom is Malaysian, my father is from China. So I'm a first generation Singaporean, a very young one. Usually most Singaporeans are 3-4 generations.
Yeah.
I grew up in Malacca,
okay,
and Johor Bahru, and so I studied triple science, liked law, then decided that after serving my national service, I decided that, okay, I'm going to fight out with the best in the world.
Yeah.
So I finished my university degree in business and went to the multinational world. So yeah. I joined advertising.
Yeah.
I thought a world where you balance left and right brain, the left and the right brain a lot. I worked at Ogilvy & Mather, met a lot of smart mentors, people who taught me how to see things from the left and the right. Mm-hmm. And then I understood that not everything is the same. You can agree to disagree. Sometimes, when you look at a question, the answer might not be there. There can be more than one answer. And that was creativity, that was also data analytics, that was also strategy.
The question I want to ask you is very simple. Ogilvy & Mather, WPP Group, fantastic, safe, you can probably retire there. Why jump into this whole strange world of VC?
Well, I think I have to reverse that bit. I think because of the always looking for new things, you start to look at, when you're in an advertising world, you are doing well, you really want to do well, it's very easy to get a C, you just service what the clients needs.
Yeah.
But you want to do well, really must introduce clients new things.
Yeah.
So in introducing clients new things, I met a lot of new startups, and those days you don't call startups, they were called geek teams, right?
So this is what, 20?
This is 2000s.
2000s, wow, okay.
So,
I was in school, by the way.
Yeah, you in school. You know, 2003 or 2004, I gave a gentleman, you might know him, I gave him a PO to run a set of banner advertising on his website. And the gentleman's name was called Patrick Grove. It was called Catcher.
Okay.
Yeah, that was 2003 or 2004.
Oh my God.
That was how long ago it was.
Yeah.
And then I knew him from there. Okay. And then during those years, I gave many of the startups their whole, I call it the first project.
Okay.
But now I learned the term is called POC.
Today,
proof of concept. But in the old days, it was called project.
Yeah.
So I gave a lot of startups their projects. I always partner with new companies so that my traditional clients can appreciate new ways of looking at things.
Okay.
So in the spirit of that, I did a lot of angel investments
in a
tech world. Mm. And I also helped my company look at new partners, whether they can purchase them, or they can M&A them. Mm. This was both at WPP when I was at MindShare, and also when at Publicis at Starcom Medivest Group and Vivaki.
Yeah.
So later, as I was in the industry, I was known as being a digital data tech guy.
Yeah.
Even though I came from the traditional world.
Yeah.
I was very
but
embracing.
Still, yeah, because of your familiarity with the situation, actually, you're not really a newbie in that zone.
Yeah, and I was a Google, Facebook's, probably the biggest partner in Southeast Asia.
Mm.
So the time came when there was an opportunity to take stock of my career.
Mm.
I decided, like a football player, I took half-time break. First half of my life worked for someone. The second half of my life, I wanted to do for myself.
Mm.
Yeah, I left the corporate world. I didn't want to do anything.
Mm.
I didn't do any corporate work. I did my digital transformation business.
Mm.
Did a lot of my special purpose vehicles for investments.
Mm.
Then
so this is what already, like 2010?
2016.
So not that far.
Ago. Then a lot of the VCs that I knew from the past asked me to be their venture partner. So I was a venture partner at InQuest, and then later on at Quest Ventures. And also I had a lot of friends in the different PE firms and also Temasek as well.
Mm.
So most folks asked me to say, hey Jeff, I think they wanted me to be part of it because they wanted to bring my big business connections to give to their startups or try out projects.
Okay.
So that was important. Okay. Because you can have all the theory or startup you want, but when the big businesses are not using you and paying you
fee, there's no point. It's just lip service.
Yeah, it's just that. So that was the space. And then one fine day, one of the startups call me up and say, hey,
which one is this?
This was a company called SGAG, right? Okay. In Malaysia, it's called MGAG.
Yeah,
famous for Hetmail, right?
Yeah.
Millennial marketing company, most recently invested by Temasek. Mm. And they also have a license, they have a global license from Google and TikTok. Mm, mm. So the founder said, hey, Jeff, can I introduce you to James Tan of Quest? Because James wants to meet you.
Okay.
So I introduced, and then James asked me to be a venture partner.
Okay.
So I came to Quest to be a venture partner. Oh. And but it was an ecosystem player, taking a lot of Singapore government grants, doing a lot of grants and working with different people and some angel investment.
One thing that I want to understand is this. A lot of startups that are based in Singapore has never looked at Singapore as a primary market. They look at it as the basis of how to do business or where to do business, but their markets are everywhere. Mm. Do you feel that this is going to change anytime soon, or do you feel that the internationalization aspect of startups based in Singapore is still going to be there for a long time to come?
It's a very good question. I think it goes back to the fundamentalism of the Singapore economy system. I think the first 30, 40 years of the Singapore economy system, it was built to be a hub of the global economy. Mm. And as a result, the education system, the orientation of people are towards working in multinationals. Mm. So the bilingual language, the science-based, mathematics-based thinking, a reduced focus on humanities, which is not very nice because I like that in Singapore. And then because of that, most Singaporeans graduate from the system, very good at STEM, S-T-E-M, and then also very good at working in multinational companies.
Yeah. But and the humanities aspect is not there.
It was not there.
And you coming from the world of advertising, marketing, that is impactful. And because you know everything runs marketing.
But at the same time, I'm also a triple science student. But whether it's
Which is strange. You don't get normal science students in marketing, right?
Is it by design or by default? Because the system encourages people to do science in those years in the 70s and 80s, right? So we all put that way. As a result, a lot of startups also see themselves as multinationals. So their mindset is always start Singapore, always go international.
Yeah.
Because it's the same way the Singapore education system was built on, to be a global node, is a node in a global economy.
Yeah.
So that thinking remains.
No, the NODE basically.
NODE.
Yeah.
But the globalization has taken a different slant today. Mm. I think when I was younger in school, it's called protectionism. Today, the word is nationalism. It's called pride.
Still there, though.
It's still pride, but it's called a different thing.
It's a rebranding.
Yeah. And people are all wanting to be behind the two phrases of food security and self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
Many people become now a bit more insular in the way they look.
Yeah.
More protective.
Yeah.
And I think tighter on borders.
Yeah.
What took 20 years for WTO from GATT to become WTO was probably rolled back in 5 years.
Yeah.
Right? Quickly. And I think the vulnerabilities of a global economy were shown in its full force during the Suez Canal crisis, the COVID lockdown, and then most recently the Ukraine war. Mm. People realized that you can be as good as you want as being part of a global economy node, but if the systems don't deliver things, you don't get a value creation.
Yeah.
So the bigger countries who are self-sufficient in major economies start to protect. The smaller vulnerable countries start now to find alternative sources, right, to de-risk themselves.
Yeah.
So we are going to a new world where I think that what used to be WTO is not important anymore. What used to be perhaps unipolarity, right, now will become multipolarity world, right, where the seat of power is. And by design of that, sources of funding will also look that way.
What about post-pandemic environment? Is this going to change?
That will, I think, accentuate it a bit. Unless, I think, the powers to be sit down and decide that they want a flatter world.
Okay, how do you fit in this? How does Quest Venture fit in this?
It's a very good question. I think as we invest, I mean, our thesis from day one was about digital economy. Anything from the old economy that can capitalize on the power of digital data tech into the new world.
Yeah.
So we invest from media, which is the SGAG, influencer systems to karaoke, to cars, to cloud kitchens, where people where I have a Philippine cup kitchen where someone working in Saudi Arabia can order a lechon straight for the family using a cloud, using a cloud kitchen website.
Yeah.
So the money doesn't need to go to Western Union transfer. It can go straight and buy something and get delivered.
Yeah.
So this is digital economy at its best, right? The world works that way.
Mm.
And I think my Malaysian startup who is doing, who is into furnishings and renovation, can now, people can now go on it, find terrazzo tiles, homogeneous tiles from Spain, from Portugal, without needing to fly there or to go to Milan to look at the samples.
Yeah.
They can order it, they can find things that are that excess stocks, and they can use it and for the building economies of Singapore, Malaysia and Vietnam.
Does that fit into your thesis, this whole?
It does. Because
how does it work?
The old economy of shipping and ordering on PO and using LC's letters of credit, now you can do it on a platform.
Speaking of which, so Quest Ventures actually put money in Malaysian VC. Not many Singapore VCs do that. Why do you guys do this?
It's a very sensitive question. It's partly geographical knowledge. It's partly perception. I would argue that it's partly parochial as well. Many people see Indonesia as a 330 million gorilla, very big. But very few people know that outside the main cities, it's not easy, right? The graduates, the American graduates of America, Indonesian, comes from a certain few cities.
Yeah.
That's about it,
yeah.
Right? So the distribution is not there. You look at Vietnam. Vietnam is a country well-trained in the system. The quality of education is good. Technical education is good. So people look at that country because they're very driven, very hungry. But the challenge of the language and also the style of business outside Vietnam is a challenge, but people see the power of Vietnam. Singapore was always a place of capital, right? Where people come and the capital is here, and also a great
financial
place
capital, human capital, you
human capital,
it.
And people are comfortable here. So if your company is set up here, your COPSEC is good, you get funding and you get many things, you get IP protection, you get staff, you're good. But generally speaking, what is a Singaporean is very difficult to define. I mean, I'm a first-generation Singaporean, right? But I still have relatives in China, lots of relatives in Malaysia. I got friends in many countries in the world, right? I've been to Myanmar, set up my Myanmar office in the advertising world. But what is a Singaporean, right? Singaporean is a bunch of people that were here and respect and wants to work the system here. But we are very clear, it's international. But when people look at Malaysia, they look at a country that's really big, full of resources, full of stuff. But if you look at it, it's perceptively from my friends, my partners in Malaysia always remind me, my partners at Scale Up Malaysia, Aaron Sama, always remind me that Malaysia, if you look at Malaysia, right, you take away, you look at the major cities, right, the major cities, the major urban nodes, that's where the real business is for the tech startups. The rest of the rural areas, the agrarian culture still remain the same. Those are not going to be part of the digital economy. So people might have a perception of Malaysia being a country in that space, and seeing that there's no space to come up because they think that the country, because of the challenges to the business and the politics in the last 20 years, people have a different look at it. But
and yet you still bet on some of the companies.
Well, because in situations like these, right, you see the true heroes come up. I speak, if I can use the Mandarin term in a conversation.
Yeah.
In difficult times, in tumultuous times, you find the best and most all-rounded heroes that come out of it. So in situations when it's difficult, when nothing is given to you, you see the people who innovate, look around things, they don't fake until it's real, they're super authentic in what they do, and they'll find their way out.
Mm.
No different from my granddad when he left China at 13 and a half years old, because he was so hungry.
Yeah.
He took a boat down and come to reach Singapore. And when people ask me who's the best startup founder, I say it's my granddad. Because the guy is 13 and a half years old, don't know how to swim, can only speak one Chinese dialect, took a boat down here to Singapore and worked among the Malays. Now, how hard is that? That must be so hard for him, man.
It's unbelievable, even the story itself.
Yeah, man. But
think about yourself, like a 13-year-old who don't speak anything, just work among some of the races that might not meet.
Yeah, and you don't even know how to swim. You took a boat for 3.5 months to come down. So I think that a lot of good startup founders have that kind of spirit. And I think the Malaysian startup founders have that kind of spirit. Perhaps what they need to do, they need to a bit understand about corporate secretariat work, they need a bit more grooming about how to work outside the markets. Okay? I think, but those things you can learn on the job. But the spirit, the start, the product, how to go out and get money and get people to use you, that's important.
But the tools and all that, right? let's say finishing school, for instance, to get them, you know, sorted out in terms of the back end. All that can be sorted. The most important thing here is the drive, the desire, the need for them to the word I'm looking for is
finishing school?
Yeah, no, no. The word I'm looking for is the urgency. The urgency for them to get this done, the drive internally. I mean, you can't manufacture that. If you don't have it, you don't have it, right?
Well, it's a good point, but you look at a culture, if I may use the example, Israel or Taiwan. Taiwan and Israel, two countries who exist temporarily, in a temporal time basis, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. They are threatened by circumstances.
Yeah.
Right? So they are always in a rush to do things and get things done. And that's why their innovation, they trust the way they get things to market is fast. You look at China, when they first started out, right, when they're opening up, the desire to show that they can do their STEM training is very good,
yeah,
STEM,
yeah.
They are very good, they've got a huge market.
Yeah.
They just grow really fast, the desire to push. And many of them went overseas to study. You look at it, and then you see Indonesia went through a stage where many of them went to US to study. And credit goes to President Jokowi. He flew there personally to recruit all of them to come back.
Mm.
Brilliant. And now he put a few of them in his cabinet as future leaders of the...
Nadiem Makarim, to name the name a few.
And the architect of his future economy model, right? So I think that the spirit of this region is always about that you are guided by your history, but you have to forge your own future history. So everyone is trying to do that.
Mm.
Today, I think geography lines draw a very light demarcation in people's minds, as much as there's conversation from Tun about Pedra Branca. But I think that people...
He's always having that conversation. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
It's just a nice island. I've been there. It's a piece of rock.
You've been there.
I mean, I sail past it. You slip on a rock, you fall down, you sure break your leg. Yeah, but I think these are all rocky conversations. Pardon my pun.
But the point here is that you still see some optimism coming in, not just from Malaysia, but from the region as well.
I think the region will always be there. The region is a region of diversity. And in diversity itself, you don't get homogeneous so fast.
Okay. Jeff, let's pause for a bit. We'll be right back after these messages because the conversation with Quest Ventures is a never-ending one, but we still have to go for a break. We'll be right back after this. Hey, thanks for joining us. So on the show right now is Jeff Rusia, the partner of Asia Fund for Quest Ventures. Jeff, let's go on with that conversation right now. I want to learn a little bit better about the notion that you spoke about with ASEAN and many more. Talk to us through that whole idea.
I think ASEAN was a very convenient grouping for economic needs. All right, political will and geopolitical power wasn't its first priority. It was an economic progress grouping. If you see as a region, Southeast Asia, in different, to your point about different levels of growth as among the different countries, right? It's no different from big country like China, Russia, or US. The coastal states grow fastest. The inner states grow slower.
Yeah, yeah, that's natural.
It's normal for big regions.
Yeah, yeah.
Likewise, you just hear that there are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 geographic sovereign wealth states, right? So some grow faster, some grow slower. But as in spirit of neighborhood and people growing together, I think it is also time to see that we can do collective growth. At the same time, we don't need to balance out or even up the growth. It's about collectivism, how to do things together.
Let's talk a little bit more about Quest Venture Day. What is it all about? Why are you doing it in KL? Why not somewhere else?
Oh, good question. I think it's time. It's time that we... it's time that I find an excuse to go KL and visit my 60 cousins.
And visit me, why not, right? Yeah.
No, it's time. I think nothing beats doing it rather than saying it. Everyone says that they are active in Malaysia. They have been active in Malaysia. They are ecosystem play in Malaysia. They invest in Malaysia. But very few people do it with the desire, the commitment, and the force. So we invested in... We wanted to invest in 17, 18 companies. In the end, we did about 14, 15, right? Some of them still want to... Some of them wanted to join the program. Some of them opt out. Some of them decided that they are not ready, right? But we are open for everyone.
For whatever reason.
So we have issued checks for 14, 15, 16 companies.
Originally. So what's the normal ticket size for that?
This is an accelerator program with Scale Up Malaysia. So we are doing together Scaramelli. It's about $250,000 each, all right? And my, it's about $250,000 each we are going in. And then leading them to a next round of investment.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the things we are doing in Malaysia this time now, it's time after two rounds of investments, we thought we would go in, and now the COVID is open. I bring also all my business partners in Malaysia to meet all the startups so that they can do proof of concepts together, right? Which is most important because you're going to get deals, you're going to get things done. When there's businesses, then people invest in you more.
Yeah.
At the same time, I also want to bring outsiders in my Kazakhstan. So my Quest Ventures fund is invested by my Asia fund too at Quest Ventures. Quest Ventures is predominantly ecosystem event coordinator.
Yeah.
My Asia fund too is the only venture fund that we have.
Yeah.
All right. The Asia fund too is invested by Temasek, Pavilion Capital, and also Kazakhstan sovereign wealth fund called Kastek Ventures. So we are bringing some of the Kazakhstan companies into Malaysia as well. So I used to tell the Kazakhstan folks that Southeast Asia is the economic bridge for them into the Muslim states of Malaysia and Indonesia so that they can escape from being cornered by China and Russia. So a lot of my Kazakhstan startups will come. Many of them are operating in Malaysia and also Indonesia. So they will come and meet. Some of my Singapore startups are also going. And some of the Singapore startups actually also operate in Malaysia, like MGAG.
Yeah.
They operate in Malaysia really.
Yeah.
They are quite big in Malaysia and they almost got censored by people as well.
Yeah, of course.
They make funny comments on people.
Yeah.
I told them everyone must laugh at themselves.
They must.
And must laugh at ourselves. So we have people that operate in Malaysia, but not necessarily started in Malaysia or are domiciled in Malaysia. So, and go back to your earlier question, what is Southeast Asia? In a digital economy space, you might not belong to the place, but you might operate in that place. Right? So one of the big things about digital economy, I came from the multinational world. In the old days, multinational world, you have 100 offices, 100 markets. Today, the startups tell you that I operate in 10 markets, but only physically exist in 3 markets. So
That's right. It
works that way too. So many people operating in the Malaysian economy, doing a lot in the Malaysian tech startup world, but may not be there. So I'm bringing them there. So we have a day called a Quest Ventures Day.
Yeah, that's happening on when?
On 13th of July at Google KL Central.
Okay.
Very happy to have a lot of my friends, my business partners.
Can people like sign up, join this, or how does it work?
Yes, they can sign up. You can sign up, join. You can check out Quest Ventures website or Scale Up Malaysia website. They can sign up. In fact, we have invited people. The staff, the younger staff should come. It is not a job hunting place, but if you want to find a job, it's okay. They can find a job. Yeah. But it's a good place.
Bring your business cards, I suppose.
Yeah, they can come.
Digital economy and still we have business cards.
Yeah,
how about
it helps you remember, right?
Yeah, I mean, it does.
Who you meet in the face, in flesh, is more important, right? And the physical orientation counts. So it'll be a good thing. I think it'll be a great meeting of leaders. We're also very glad to have some corporate leaders coming. My some friends from Accenture will be here. Zolera from Meranti is here. I hope to plant a tree, a Meranti tree behind her, but anyway, that's a joke again. we also have the great celebrity VC, Aaron Sama, who's joining us as well. And hopefully by, like all Singaporeans, I might just prepare two cups of water there. So every time I drink water, I change my language I speak.
Like
my Prime Minister. So I'll be moderating them, the three of them. My friends Prashant Kumar from Accenture Entropia, Zolera from Meranti, and also Aaron Sama from SRM. So it'll be a great event. You also hear many of the startups pitch in the panel. We'll talk about the future of Malaysia's digital economy. And I'm sure it'll be a great place.
Right. Jeff, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us. I really appreciate this. I know you're a very busy man, but because of the fact that you are taking the time to actually tell us your views, tell us your ideas, that is really very much of a valuable experience for me and for our viewers at home. If you want to learn more about Quest Venture Day, just check out the Scale Up Malaysia website. You can find out a lot more resources from there. But for now, thanks very much for spending time with us. You can find out more resources on astronaut.com. Look for Notepad. There's a lot more information of this kind of sort of information right now that can be useful for you. But for now, thanks very much for joining us. This is me signing off from the Ayer Rajah Crescent at Block 71 in Singapore.